Hi, freut mich hier zu sein. Ich hoffe, ihr versteht mich, beziehungsweise versteht mich irgendjemand nicht, weil eigentlich war der Talk auf Englisch angekündigt, aber... Oh, there's one English-speaking person. Okay. Now I thought I would have an easy job today, but okay. Pardon? Of course, you're welcome. Okay, then we talk in English. Okay, just let me switch in my brain. Okay. Okay, we're here about to talk about Hadoop today, and as been said in the introduction, it's really it's a really hype topic right now. Big data. I mean, everybody I think has heard about it. I'm not even starting with NSA and all that stuff. I don't want to rate it today. It's just about giving you an introduction to the Hadoop ecosystem. So I've already been introduced. So like being said, I would consider myself a big data nerd. I'm working for Codecentric, and there I'm, amongst others, I'm working as a Hadoop trainer. I'm currently writing a book on MongoDB, which is going into the same direction, of course. And I'm running the user groups of Hadoop and MongoDB in the Rhein-Main area. So still small user groups, but feel free to join us if you're around in the Frankfurt area. And personally, I like to travel and I like to photograph, but okay, that's pretty much common. I have to say this, working for Codecentric, if you want to join us, we're a pretty cool bunch of big data nerds, agile ninjas. We're pretty much into the J2E stack and continuous delivery, all that stuff. So of course, we're constantly hiring, so please feel free to join us. We have offices all over Germany. The nearest one here would be Düsseldorf, Solingen, or Frankfurt, whatever you feel comfortable with. And what I want to talk about today is really, like I said, I will be trying to give you an introduction over Hadoop. So I will not go into all the details of Hadoop, because this would be simply too much for 45 minutes. Actually, the talk is meant to be 60 minutes, so I will have to strip it down right now. I will give you an introduction, shortly talking about what is big data, what is Hadoop, talking about the core Hadoop, about the ecosystem itself, give you some use cases, and then give you an outlook of what's coming next with Hadoop 2.0, which should be really, really interesting. Big data, why is everybody talking about it? This is like the classical definition. So big data, the name says it. First of all, it's the volume of data sets is constantly growing. This is one reason why we are even dealing with big data and talking about this, and why this is a hype topic right now. Just to give you a short idea about, we're talking here about Google, Facebook, eBay, Yahoo, so the really big Web 2.0 players. And even back in 2008, Google had something like 200 petabyte a day. So that's pretty challenging to store all of this data and then do processing on it. I mean, Google is totally in its own world. They're not even thinking about Hadoop right now. They have like the two generations ahead and doing their own stuff with the Dremel drill and all that stuff. But once upon a time, they started with Hadoop. And actually, they're still contributors to the open source projects. But it's not only only about the volume why we're talking about big data. Another fact is that the velocity of data generation is getting faster and faster. So just to give you a short idea, it's some of the nice infographics which can be found all over the internet. But you get the idea here. I mean, these are the typical applications, websites everybody's using. Like Twitter, I mean, we're really talking about data being generated really, really fast here. I mean, if we are looking at Twitter, if there's a hype topic at Twitter, there are like 100,000 tweets per second, for example, if it's really hot, and that's a real challenge just to process this data in real time or in almost near real time. So that's one side which is also playing is also a factor in big data. And another one is the variety of data is increasing. So this means usually we're coming from a world where we're talking about structured data. Think back about 70s, 80s, relational databases. Everything could be stored in relational databases. We had our nice tables. We could structure everything in tables. But nowadays, the data is getting more and more unstructured. So for example, tweets, if you had a look at them, they're in JSON format. They have some kind of structure, so I would consider some semi-structured. But yeah, you cannot rely on the structure anymore. So how do we store data like that? And of course, completely unstructured data. It's Hadoop Big Data is really about the mantra is storing all the data first, and then see what we can. What information we can get out of these data afterwards. So the principle I just talked about, it's called the 3 Vs of Big Data. It's made famous by Gartner. And if you ask anybody about big data, this would be the first definition everybody would tell you. So it's volume, velocity, variety. There are lots of other Vs which have been added by various marketing companies, publishers, and so on. So it's really, like I said, it's really a hype topic. I think in half a year, nobody can say the word big data anymore without being thrown out of the room instantly. Then we will call it smart data or whatever. I think it will be smart data. We'll see about that, but nevertheless, that's why I like this definition better. For me, I would say big data is just when the data itself becomes part of the problem. I think that's pretty much sums it up. It's not about, I have 100 terabyte here. Is this already big data, or do we need to talk petabyte and stuff like that? It's simply, if you're having a problem with the data itself, storing it, processing it, this is where you should think about all the variety of big data solutions, or big data solutions. Okay, and why are we talking Hadoop right now? The thing is, we're coming from a world where relational databases have been dominant for decades right now. And although there have been some efforts to do your SQL cluster, your Oracle cluster, your RUC stuff and so on, they are really, really expensive and it's imminent to SQL. They cannot scale beyond a certain barrier. So, and another trend that is coming into here is that commodity hardware is just getting cheaper and more powerful. I mean, think about what is a typical server today has, like, I don't know, 48 gigs of RAM, no big deal, like 6 terabyte hard drive and so on. And that's what you're going here. It's really you're not trying to scale up today. So not buying a bigger server until you don't can afford it anymore. The thing is, you're really trying to scale out. Meaning you're buying like 1,000 boxes of commodity hardware, and then trying to scale vertically. That's the mantra behind all these Hadoop stuff, and actually behind all the big data solutions, NoSQL, whatever. But what do we mean by scale data? I mean, how do we want to scale data? Actually, what do we want? We have some data, and we want to gather some result from the data. And the idea how we do it, I mean, I actually said it. It's pretty much. It's a classical divide and conquer strategy. Has been around for quite some years now. So nothing fancy here. It's really we're splitting up the data, having different workers, and then in the end getting the results and putting the results together to the one big result we want to talk about. So that's actually all there is about. But of course, there are buts. I think you would have expected it. Parallel processing itself is complicated. I mean, starting from thread safety and how do you distribute the data, how do you select which data goes to which computer, how do you handle failovers, stuff like that. That's not a trivial task. So you most probably don't want to do that all on your own, because if you have to write a logic all for yourself, okay, it would take some time, I think. But maybe, I don't know, maybe you're a genius, I'm not. And also the data storage part, it's also not trivial, it's the same. I mean, hardware is doomed to fail. When we have a big cluster, let's say like 5,000 node cluster, you can expect hard drives to fail at least one per day and stuff like that. And so the data system behind it has to be robust to handle all these failovers and stuff like that. And that's what Hadoop is offering you. If I want to describe it shortly, I would say Hadoop is a distributed storage and computation framework, and that's actually the two main Aufgaben. Thanks. It's storing data, and based on the data, we can start doing some computations. And also, it might look like that. Big data is actually not only Hadoop. Hadoop is really hype right now as well. So I would say, like, if somebody says big data today, it's like 80% they mean Hadoop. But there are lots of other systems which I would consider big data systems, starting from the whole NoSQL stuff. Then we have all the in-memory databases and so on, and we will see about the shortcomings of Hadoop as well. So it's really a hype, because it's easy to set up, it's cheap, and it's good for really, really many use cases, but it's not the thing that everything is working on Hadoop or will be working on Hadoop. And don't make the mistake, I added this slide because I often hear the thing that Hadoop is not a database. It's really its own system. So we're not talking about tables or relations or anything right now. And one thing to keep in mind also is Hadoop itself, Hadoop started a long time ago, and it's constructed as a web scale system, and it was constructed as a batch system. It means don't expect to have something like real-time data, near real-time data from Hadoop. It's more like if you're doing some pre-computations, you're gathering your data, you're doing computations. These computations take time, so it's not like, okay, I click a button, I compute on 500 petabyte of data, and within 400 milliseconds, predecessor was saying. No, that's not going to happen. So the Hadoop, these MapReduce jobs, they can take 4 hours. So that's one thing to keep in mind, and to live with this shortcoming of Hadoop, or it's not a shortcoming, it's actually a design decision made. There are other systems, like, for example, Twitter Storm. I will be talking about that tomorrow, how we can deal with real-time requirements. This was too fast. Okay, and finally, Hadoop. In some article, it was called a Swiss Army knife for the 21st century, and actually I like this definition. Because what's an army knife? It's lots of tools put together in one knife, and that's actually what Hadoop is about. I often refer to it as the Hadoop App Store, because it kind of feels like an app store. You're starting with the core of Hadoop. We will be learning about that. It's HDFS, the distributed file system. For data storage, then we have MapReduce, which is the processing algorithm for all of this data. But on top of that, there are lots of other projects. Of course, all of these, I should mention, all of these are Apache projects. All of this is open source. We have lots of other projects there for processing the data in different ways, for managing the data, for managing the cluster, for dealing with how to get data into my Hadoop cluster, how to deal with workflows. So you can see there's a really mature ecosystem around there. And of course, there's always money in it. some said it's going to be something like a 20 billion market, a big data market, within the next 4 years. And yeah, everybody wants a piece of that cake, of course. So distributors are coming into game. Probably you've heard of Cloudera. It's the most known one, at least here in Germany. Hortonworks is pretty famous as well. And of course, all the big players like Intel, IBM, Microsoft, and so on are adding to the crowd. And yeah, of course, they're not only distributions. There are lots of other applications built on top of Hadoop. So mainly for data visualization, this is one part where Hadoop itself is not that good. So if you're dealing with Hadoop, you're really working a lot with your PuTTY sessions and stuff like that, and in your command line and so on. So there's no nice way of visualizing the data and so on. So that's where third-party vendors come into the game. Another way to look at it, it's if we're talking Apache Hadoop, this really means these are all open source projects. These are the cores. You can download all of these open source projects for yourself and try to figure out which version is compatible to which version. And yeah, if you're lucky, maybe you get a stable system within a week. I don't know. It's really quite difficult because there are so many different projects. So the typical way would be you would download a Hadoop distribution. Like I said, Cloudera is a famous one, Hortonworks or MapR. They just add all this packaging and test stuff for you. Actually, what they do, most Cloudera and Hortonworks, they are both spin-offs of Yahoo, which is kind of the originator of Hadoop. So lots of stuff was invented and developed at Yahoo. So, and that's sort of spin-offs to make it enterprise ready. So they're doing all the tests and packaging stuff. They can use all the Yahoo clusters. Yahoo has something like, I don't know, in the meantime, it should be something like over 60,000 nodes in Hadoop clusters running, of course, all different clusters. But yeah, I would trust if something is tested on these kind of massive computers, I would trust it more than my own local tests. And of course, then we have the big data suites, which are coming into the game as well, and they are just adding visualization. I told it, everybody right now is proposing to do something like real-time analysis on Hadoop. That's the big hype topic right now on Hadoop. Yeah, we can think about that what you want. Okay, now. First things first, talking about core Hadoop. What is core Hadoop? Of course, I said you want to do two things first. You want to store your data first. So, okay, how do we do that? That's, there's an app for that. It's called HDFS. It's the Hadoop Distributed File System. And it's really meant to store your data redundant on big clusters. So we're really talking about cluster sizes here, 4,000, 5,000 computers. And for you, it's simple. You're storing the data into HDFS, and HDFS is taking care of all the stuff behind it. So usually it makes the data you put into HDFS is split into blocks or chunks, whatever you call it. Typical chunk size would be something like 128 megabyte, and then these blocks are stored in the cluster and are distributed on the cluster. And Hadoop is also taking care about making copies of this data to store it reliably. So usually you have three copies of each block, and so if one block is corrupt, you always have two backup copies. And of course, Hadoop is handling all the stuff behind it to recover broken blocks and so on. One thing is, Hadoop really is intended for large files and for batch inserts. So don't even try to put lots of small data into a Hadoop. So if you want to do something like your small clickstream data or something like, put that into Hadoop, it would be totally failing because the system is not intended for it. And one thing also, it's Hadoop is meant for write once, read many times. So once you have put your data into Hadoop, you simply don't touch it anymore. So it's you cannot change the data. It's not possible. What you can do is you can append data, but that's a damn slow operation. So don't even think about it to do it. So write the data once into HDFS and leave it there. Like I said, that's the mantra. Store all the data and see what we can do with it later. When we're talking about the architecture, pretty basic as well. You see, it's a classical master-slave architecture we're talking here. So the master in HDFS, it's called the name node. It basically maintains two files. It has a block map, so remember the data is split into different blocks. So it has a map simply with all the blocks. So block 225 is located on cluster node 375 and stuff like that. And and additionally, it has a journal log, meaning new data is written into HDFS. It just logs where the new data is put into, and all of these data is then stored on data nodes. These are pretty dumb slave components, which really are just there for storing the data. So just put lots of hard drives in there and you're done. Then there's one additional component I don't even want to talk about it. It's called secondary name node. Don't make the mistake and think this is something like a backup for the name node. It's simply just a helper. The architecture right now, it's the master right now is a single point of failure in this architecture, which is in reality it's not of a big issue. If you want to deal with that right now, you can use some virtualization technologies so that you can have two master, meaning a hot one and a cold backup, and then you can switch within these masters. We will be talking about Hadoop 2.0, so there this shortcoming will be dealt with. So what's happening right now when a client is trying to write a file, it's basically client is communicating with the master, is asking for permission. You have something like your basic Linux permission scheme there, is asking, hey, am I allowed to write the data? Name node says okay. Then client is asking again, okay, where can I write my data? Then it gets the nodes it is allowed to write the data back from the master, and then it communicates directly with the data nodes, actually with the first data node, is writing the data to the data node number one. Then HDFS takes care of making two copies of these data, and once all of these three copies are stored safely, the acknowledgement is sent to the client, and we're done. Pretty easy, but we don't want to only store the data. We want to also process the data, and there's an app for that as well. It's called MapReduce. It's actually nothing. This is that's special to Hadoop. It's actually coming from Google. There's a pretty famous paper about it. It's just a programming model how you can deal with distributed computations at a massive scale. And yeah, so it's an think about it as an execution framework and so on. And the main thing here is that data locality is king, meaning usually when you're dealing with regular size data, what you're doing is you pull your data, make copies of the data, and then on your client you do your processing of the data, and you're happy. What you're doing in MapReduce is it's more like you're sending your program to the data nodes. So it's basically you write some Java code, put it in a jar file, and then you send the jar file to the data nodes. The computation is done locally on these data nodes, and that's actually the reason why we can scale that well here. A typical large data problem is really like iterate over a large number of records, extract something of interest from each of that records. So think about processing log files. You want some piece of information from the log file. You extract that, then you Then you have your intermediate results, you shuffle and sort them, you aggregate those intermediate results, and based on that you have your final output. And that's actually what MapReduce is about. To clarify that a little bit better, let's have a look at the MapReduce flow. All of the algorithm is completely working on key value pairs. So, and the hello world of MapReduce is something like the word count, meaning you have different documents and you want to count the words in it. So that's the example here, meaning key is something like the file name and value is the whole document. This is the input for your MapReduce workflow. Then you have the map stage, which means you're extracting the data, the single words, and count them in this phase. Then you have, and this of course like depicted is done distributed, so over the whole Hadoop cluster. Then you have something like a combiner. You can see it on the second node, which is doing some pre-reducing of the data before it is done, because after that, what's done is the shuffle and sort phase. Right now we're locally on the computers, but now we have all those intermediate results and we need to get all these intermediate results together. You see we have something like A results on node 1 and on node 3, and all of these results need to come together on one node so that we can make a global count over it. That's what's done here in a shuffle and sort, and actually that's the slowest part because there's network traffic involved and the data is being redistributed between the nodes. And then all the data with the same key is sent to the same reducer, to the same data node that the reducer will run and just will, in this example, will simply count the keys, and what we have is the occurrences of different words in documents. That's about MapReduce. Actually, when we're looking at the architecture, you will see, have a deja vu. That's the architecture of HDFS you will see here. And surprise, it's actually the same master-slave structure here. We have a master component, which is called a job tracker, which is responsible for scheduling all your jobs. Then the jobs are sent to the different slaves, to the task trackers, and the task trackers run these tasks, and tasks in this case would be something like map and reduce. Now I want to skip this. Actually, it's pretty simple to do something in Java. All of Hadoop is written in Java, so the typical first thing would be to write your MapReduce jobs in Java. It's pretty simple, just implementing your mapper interface. You have your map method there, and then what's the method doing here is just tokenizing the data and emitting it. And then the reducer is doing nothing else. Remember, we get the data with the same keys on one reducer, so it simply has to sum up the data here. And actually, that's the word count in Java. Okay, I know you guys, no one likes Java anymore today. Yeah, it's so. Everybody says the JVM is cool, but Java, okay. You're more of a scripting guy. Well, there's an app for that as well, because when you're doing MapReduce in Java, it can get really ugly, and it's a lot of boilerplate you have to write and thinking. And actually, what you want to do is you want to process on the data flow, and that's what the guys at Yahoo thought as well. So they came up with PIC. It's a high-level data flow language. It's made of two components. It's PIC. We have one language, it's PIC Latin, and you have a compiler which is translating the PIC Latin to MapReduce. So you don't have to write all the Java code in it. And when you look at the ecosystem, it's really on top of MapReduce and HDFS. You're writing your PIC script, and then at the end of the day, everything is translated into a MapReduce job, which is using HDFS to get to the data. If we have a look at a simple PIC Latin script, you don't need to know about the details of PIC, but it's pretty straightforward. In the first two lines, we just load two files. They are user and page files, and then we just process the data. So we filter the users by age first, then we join the two files, the users and the pages. We group them, we sum them, we sum all of that up, and at the end of the day, we get like the top 10 websites, stuff like that. So pretty neat. I mean, it's like how many lines of code? Eight lines of code. That's pretty good. PIC, like I said, is translating all of this into an execution plan. MapReduce jobs, this is looking a little bit more difficult then. And you can see it's not only translated into one MapReduce job, but into lots of different MapReduce jobs. And yeah, if you want to try that with Java, like I said, you're really writing lots of code. So there's a reason why someone came up with PIC. And actually, there's not only PIC, there's also a SQL-like language for Hadoop. It's called Hive. The idea behind that is simply everybody knows SQL. And usually, if you have your Hadoop cluster, if you have your data in the company, the people are dealing with it are more like the business user, the data analysts and stuff like that. That are usually not your tech guys. I mean, I myself prefer writing PIC because I like the scripting language. But yeah, try to teach that to a business user. Nah, not going to work. So that's why Hive came up. It's really for business users, data analyzers. It's on the same layer like PIC, so at the end you're writing something like an SQL query, and at the end it's also translated into a MapReduce job and into HDFS, run on HDFS. The architecture is straightforward as well. You have your engine, you have your client, you're communicating with, actually you have a shell as well. Then you have a Hive server, and you can communicate with Hive using Thrift or HTTPC, ODBC, which are internally translated into Thrift. So more interesting is the example. If we have a look like here, I mean, you see what is done here. First, you create something like tables here. You create tables with the columns here, describing the data you're using here. Remember, all of this data is in HDFS, so it stays in HDFS. It's just like a meta description of the data. And then, based on that, you can do something like a SQL. I think everybody in the room here understands what the SQL is doing. It's actually exactly the same example we have been using for PIC. Okay. But there are lots of more components. Actually, this is just a small idea behind it. What I want to point out, it's really one thing I haven't talked about is how you get your data into your HDFS cluster. That's down here. That would be something like Scoop, which allows you to transfer data from your relational database into HDFS. You can use Flume, which is pretty typically used getting all your log data into HDFS, or all your data, whatever kind of data flows you have. On top of HDFS, you also have a NoSQL database. It's called HBase. It's more if you want to write data more often, you would use something like HBase. Then what's pretty cool is something like Mahout. It's for all of these machine learning stuff. Think about it like typical example would be the web shops, Amazon, the recommendation systems. You would think it's pretty standard right now, but as I learned, I mean, Amazon from this recommendation system is generating right now something like 40% of of all the money it's making is based on the recommendation system. So users who bought this also bought this. You all know that. You would think every web shop has it, but in Germany it's more like you have your SAP system, and then you have like static lists, and some student or some other cheap workforce is doing this list manually. But yeah, they should be using Mahout. I have to speed it up, I think. Now, if we're talking about what can you use Hadoop for, this is something like your classical enterprise data platform. You have your traditional sources, your relational databases. Maybe you have some OLTP, OLAPs, stuff like that. You store all of the data in your traditional data systems, and then you have your classical business intelligence, business application, your own custom applications. That's fine. And then now Hadoop is simply not there for replacing your traditional platform. It's more like adding value to your platform. So it means with Hadoop now it's possible that you can process lot more different sources, like logs, social media, sensor data. That's all the stuff I was talking about previously. And then you can use the Hadoop platform established in your company to deal with all of that data. I want to skip this here. The basic idea is there are different patterns how you can use Hadoop. So the first thing would use Hadoop just as something like a data refinery. You gather the data and then put it into your traditional systems and process it with your traditional applications. That's usually the first step companies are taking, and with actually quite having a steep learning curve with Hadoop, it's more like then you're starting to use Hadoop applications or applications with support for Hadoop. And in the end, if you're really good, you're using Hadoop as your business model more or less. More interesting, just to give you one example, a customer of us is into the digital advertising area. It's simply this: you have your web browser, you visit spiegel.de, and you have all those banner ads there. Everybody knows this, knows it. Everybody is annoyed by it or is blocking it. But what they're doing is they're doing something like 6 billion ad deliveries per day. That's quite a lot. And what they of course need to do, they need to report on all of these ad deliverers, and of course bill their own customers with that. What they had previously was they had a C++ solution, of course custom made, and no big surprise, it did not scale pretty much. So it was not cluster enabled at all, and at some point the scale up did not work anymore. So okay, what to do with it? And also adding functions was a nightmare, so the administration was really bad. So what they're doing right now, we're starting in the upper left corner here. They have their ad server. These are the components which are delivering the ads to your browser. Then the ad deliverers are locked using Avro, which is a storage format, over a TCP format. Then Flume is used to gather all of this data. The data is put into HDFS, into local files, and then you have your Hadoop cluster where all of this data is completely stored. You have a connection to the internal campaign database, meaning Nike booked a campaign with 10 million page impressions, stuff like that, all of these core data. You join this data there using Pick and Hive, and based on that you do your reports, stuff like, okay, basic stuff like how many page impressions did I have, where did my users come from, did they come from like regions and stuff like that. All of this is done in Pick and Hive. And then at the end, this aggregated data is stored in Vertica, which is a NoSQL database. And based on Vertica, then the traditional reporting engine is used to generate reports for the customers. So you can see it's it's pretty simple how Hadoop is being integrated into the existing stuff. Okay, I have only 5 minutes left for Hadoop 2.0, so I'll make it short. Like I said, Hadoop 1.0, like we have it right now, is built for web scale batch apps, and that's the real down part here. We're talking about batch. And that's lots of good use cases are batch, like the reporting I just had here with in the digital advertising, no problem. You can run these reports nightly, no big deal. But there are lots of other stuffs. I'll just go over this. There are lots of other shortcomings with MapReduce as well. First, the scalability. Right now, you've seen the architecture, and it's quite good, but it has its limitations. The name node really is not only a single point of failure, but it's also the element which is limiting the cluster size right now. So we're talking about a maximum of 4,500 nodes. And for the big web companies, that's definitely too less. Concurrent tasks are limited and stuff like that. The availability is good, but if something goes down, all queued jobs and running jobs fail and are not automatically restarted, which is kind of sucks if you're a big company. And imagine you're having like 10,000 MapReduce jobs in there, having a total fan out, and then, okay, what to do with that stuff? The utilization is rather slow, because right now what you're doing is you have slots for your computation, and you have different slots for the mappers and for the reducers. So you have to pre-configure this, and if you're doing it wrong, or even if you're doing it right, it results in a low utilization. And yeah, the big thing is you can only do MapReduce with it, and MapReduce, for example, for iterative algorithms, it's really bad, because you always have to get the data from the hard drives. There's no caching done, or no in-memory processing done, and stuff like that. So, yeah, these are the shortcomings, and that's where Hadoop 2.0 is coming into the game. It's actually making Hadoop a multi-purpose platform. So it allows you, it adds something like, it's called Yarn, or Hadoop 2.0 is often called Yarn. It adds something like a cluster resource management, which allows to make something like a plugin architecture. So MapReduce with the upcoming version is only one part, one application you can use on base of all your stored big data. And there are lots of other applications already being added. This is still in development right now. I think it's everybody's saying it's going GA end of the year. We'll see about that. But the cool thing is you can use different paradigms right now. So it's not only batch with MapReduce, but you can use more interactive queries where the response times are really, really much better. You can use it for online stores much better. It's the next evolution step of the HBase database. You can use something like, for example, a storm is also being transported to HDFS 2.0. So you can use streaming, real time stuff can be done, graphical stuff, in memory stuff. So really, lots of different paradigms can now be used. So it's actually, you can store all of your data into Hadoop, and yeah, process it the best way you need it for your business case, for your use case, which is actually quite cool. One thing, how is it done? The main idea behind the architecture, the new architecture, is what has previously been the job tracker, it had two main major functions. It was the cluster resource management and the application life cycle management. This is now really split into two different parts. So now you have a central part, it's the resource manager, which is doing all the scheduling. And you have different node managers. And on these node managers, you have something like containers, which are slots you can use for your applications. So when you when you think about it, at the end you really have your big cluster. I would call it then a big data cluster. You have your different applications. For example, here we have MapReduce. This is just one application of many. It uses containers for its mappers, for its reducers. Then you can have something like HBase, which is using different containers for the region servers, for the HBase master. You have something like Storm, which also uses containers for its own internal architecture. So that's what I'm saying when I'm talking about general purpose, multi-purpose platform. Okay, I'll skip that. And actually, that's for now. Just two short things. I already mentioned the user groups. I'm kind of sorry, I'm looking into lots of question marks here as well. I was trying to give you an introduction as good as I can, but it's actually really hard to get into all of this Hadoop stuff. So one thing would be join us at the user groups. Like I said, I'm running the one in Frankfurt with lots of other good user groups there. Learn about Hadoop. You will definitely need to read some books to get into the topic. Of course, I need to do that. We have some trainings in my company as well. And yeah, actually, if I was talking too much right now and you're still missing all the practical approaches, just join me tomorrow for a workshop from 10 to 14. I think it's somewhere in the workshop room. And what we will be doing there is I will be bringing a virtual machine. It's all pre-configured with all of the Hadoop stuff. And then I have some practices. We're going into more into the details of how you can use Hadoop so you can get a better feeling of what it is like working with Hadoop and what you can actually do with Hadoop. And that's it, folks. Yeah, we're doing it with a virtual machine. It's the Hortonworks sandbox. When you're interested, it's actually really cool. It's just a simple virtual machine. Download it. They have quite good tutorials in it. Just it's a good starting point to learn more about Hadoop. And that's the end. You're dismissed, actually, if you have any questions, but feel free to ask me. Of course. Yes. Yeah, it's actually Twitter Storm, yeah. It's the new version is running on Yard. The old version, it's a standalone version. You said it's been being developed, or it has been bought by Twitter, and Twitter is using it extensively. So it's a standalone version. It's a cluster application as well, but it's already being ported to the Yarn stuff. It's still beta. You can use it. It's actually quite cool. Yeah, you can hear about it tomorrow. I will be talking about that as well. Any more questions? No. Okay, class dismissed. Thanks a lot.